There we go. All right. So let's talk about the preterist view. Now, the preterists, just to, instead of me reading all this, they believe that all the prophecies in Revelation already happened. And they happened before what date? Anybody know?
70 AD.
Before 70 AD.
And they're all dead by now already. So, kind of who cares? I guess somebody's still carrying the torch for
them. So, when they read the stuff in Revelation, for example, the beast that symbolizes Nero. You know, during that time that that this was happening, which was the first century, right? Somewhere around there. So they say all the prophecies already happened. The only thing that needs to happen is the second coming of Christ. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Except for the full preterist.
They believe that even Jesus already came back.
Jesus has returned.
Yeah. Which, that's heresy, in my opinion.
We missed it.
Yeah, we missed it. So the partial preterists, which we're talking about here, these guys are called partial preterists, believe most prophecy was fulfilled by 70 AD, but maintain a future physical return of Christ. So they still believe that Christ is going to come at the end. And then, like John was saying, the full preterists claim all prophecies, including the return of Christ, already happened. All right, so that's the preterist view. They have a lot of good points. A lot of good points that you start to think and like, wow, okay, this kind of makes sense. The next one is the historic premillennialism. It's sort of similar to dispensational premillennialism, but it's different. And it's different because they interpret Revelation symbolically and literal. So they mix it up. They mix it up.
Historic premillennialism?
Historic premillennialism.
Okay.
So they interpret the book of Revelation by combining literal and symbolic approaches. It holds that Jesus Christ will return physically before a literal thousand-year reign on earth as described in Revelation 20. However, it tends to interpret future prophetic passages regarding Israel more symbolically or spiritually, viewing the church as the fulfillment of Old Testament promises to Israel. So all the promises to Israel that we see in Revelation were already, they were fulfilled in the church. Okay? They believe in a future kingdom. They believe that Jesus is going to come back. But all the promises, all the prophecies that are in Revelation concerning Israel are symbolically or spiritually interpreted into the church. The church is fulfilling those promises. Okay? Anybody have any questions so far about that one?
It's hard enough to get it straight with the real stuff.
Yeah.
And it kind of pretty much worked until 1948.
Yeah.
That's what the whole can of worms had to be open to get it thought about.
Mm-hmm. Now, our camp here is the dispensational. And then it uses this term here also, dispensational premillennialism. And that's what we subscribe here at the church. And you're going to see the difference when I point out a couple things about this view here. The dispensational premillennialism interprets the book of Revelation as a prophetic outline of future events. So all the prophecies that we see in the book of Revelation from chapter 4 all the way to 22 are all future. They haven't happened yet. The preterist says what? That they already what?
Yeah.
It already happened, right? And then the historic premill would say what? That some of the prophecies concerning Israel were fulfilled in what? Well, fulfilled with the church. And I left the amillennialism. What would the amill say about that the events are happening now and they will happen in the future, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we see, in other words, the amillennial view, we see some of these things happening now, but it will eventually will be fulfilled in the future. For example, what can we use for, like salvation, right? We're saved, right? Everybody who's believed in Christ is a believer. But at the end, you get the ultimate salvation, which is your glorification. That's just an example.
Oh, they call glorification ultimate salvation?
Yeah, I would say when once you, because salvation has three parts. You have justification. What is it? Justification, sanctification, and glorification. We've been justified already, those who believed already. We're being sanctified now, in the present, and in the future, you'll be glorified. Let's see what else. Dispensational premillennialism. Different takes here. So, the prophetic outline of future events that are expected to occur in a specific sequence involving Israel, the church, and Christ's physical return and earthly return. So the church is different, is distinct from Israel. That's how they would see it. The church, and Israel. They don't mix it like these guys do. We keep it distinct.
Or the amillennialists.
Or the amillennialists, right.
They do that too.
They keep it distinct. So the promises of Israel are still the promises to Israel. The promises of the church are still the promises to the church. Dispensationalists interpret Revelation's prophecies in numbers literally, not symbolically. Who does it symbolically?
Pretty much everybody else.
All these.
Well, I think historic premill.
They mix it.
They might also have a thousand being literal.
Yeah, but they mix some of the other stuff. So, the dispensations will interpret the prophecies and numbers literally, not symbolically, and read most of the book from chapters 4 to 22 as foretelling future events. So again, from chapter 4 all the way to 22, all those events that we see there are future. They believe Christ's second coming is in two stages. First, he raptures the church before a period of tribulation, then returns in glory to defeat evil and set up his millennial kingdom. So if I were to illustrate this, the dispensational, they believe in a seven-year tribulation period, right? And here would be the rapture. And the rapture is the taking up of the church. The church will not experience the seven-year tribulation, and then Christ comes down, the return of Christ. What's interesting about this view is that the historic premillennialist believes that the church, they don't believe in a rapture, they believe the church is going to go through the tribulation period. So by them thinking that way, they're not taking a lot of the things that we see in Revelation literally, they're taking it symbolically. Okay? Any questions?
There's another view that's pretty popular, the post-millennial.
Yeah.
And they believe...
That's coming back. Yeah, it's true.
That's coming back. Yeah. It was very popular. I think, before and after the First World War, and they said, they believe that everything is improving, the church will expand, and we'll get to the point where the church will take over the whole world, and there'll be a thousand-year reign, and then Christ returns.
Right.
After the millennial.
How many here by serious question, how many believe here the world's getting better? Raise your hand. You think your world's getting better? Maybe?
Pick a time period where you would like to leave. Between 100 and 1900.
Well, I do got a handle.
Would you like to go back into the 500?
Is going up. Technology is improving. 1800s
maybe. Basically, the things that keep getting better. Medical care is a lot better. Yeah. There's less war now than there was before.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Adrian? And then we'll go to Eric.
Definitively, birth rate is going up, life expectancy is going up, technology is advancing. Right. But there are still...
But overall, is that saying the world's getting better?
Yeah, there's still a lot of
problems.
That's
the problem, is to define the word better.
Yeah, how do we, which one? Eric, go ahead.
Better, I don't mean better. You mean more convenient? More advanced? Yes.
More advanced.
Better? No, because we have more violence, more...
We have less violence.
There's less violence
statistically.
When was the last time they fed anybody to the lions?
When was the last time we executed somebody? A couple weeks ago. Fed to the lions, commit a crime, execute. But in the society, in my opinion, and I'll preface that, in my opinion, in society, I did law enforcement for 30 years. In the early 90s, it was bad, but not nearly as bad as today. Mm. Today, you kill a cop every day of the week. They kill a cop. Mm. 53 hours.
Three today?
Or like,
I think, socialistically, society's getting worse. There's more pornography, there's more people being drunk, it's more acceptable to see everything much worse than it is before. Well, now, I agree with you, sir.
Yeah.
You can't pick another time. Another time that we would like to live in the street, and I'd like to live in, in the 1400s. I won't want to live there either.
Right.
So I living where I live today, but I think in my 60 years being here, progressively, it's getting worse.
It's getting worse. Okay. Yeah. I would agree with you there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you take the long view, things are getting better. In the short term, we are on a downward cycle.
Yeah.
But you figure, things go up and down, up and down and up. Things have been going up and down and up and down. It's been gradually going up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember being able to play the streets, the lights turn out. Play the streets. Now you can't let your kid on the street because guy bills or predators in the area. Or whatever happened.
Yeah.
Again, everybody has an opinion and you're right.
It all depends where everybody is.
The word's better has to be better.
Yeah. So the post-millennial view says, that they believe in, and I think when was it World War One or World War Two when that happened?
World War Two, that blew their whole
view, or their whole philosophy of that view.
It's coming back.
But it's coming back now. There's a lot of people believe that in post-millennialism now. And one of the verses that they use it, as one of their key passages is the Great Commission. Mm-hmm. When Jesus says that, he tells the disciples to go out to all the world and, evangelize and preach the gospel. So everyone could come so the whole world could receive the message of Christ. And once that happens, once that last person gets it, that's when they believe.
Father can say.
Yeah. So let me finish the dispensational view here.
Wait, I'm in
pre- Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Tonight.
You know what?
I'm in pre-kindergarten tonight.
Oh. No, we're starting with the very basic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. No, but I think it.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, but the reason why I'm doing this is because it's important to know this. We don't want to be, especially when it comes to the Book of Revelation. Different Christians interpret it different ways. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, because people think that there's only one way to interpret it. No, there's many ways, mm-hmm. and this is only a couple, and there's more. Right?
Yeah.
Right. There's more.
You don't want to be in an echo chamber.
Exactly.
You want to only hear about your own view.
Right. So I think it's smart to, to at least hear or learn about the different views. Yeah. I'm not trying to force you to believe in any of these.
No.
I'm just giving them out there so you could.
I never had.
So you could do your study at home and then come up with your own conclusions.
And the real thing is that most people never even toy with these perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And because most people really never even read the Bible.
Mm-hmm. That's true too.
And at least
they have all this knowledge available.
Exactly. They stay away from Revelation. No way. I don't want to talk to Revelation.
It's just written so differently than
but
anything else.
But is all of that in the Bible?
So it's an interpretation.
It's all
perspective.
Okay.
Yeah,
like we could see, like the way you've been taught, you could say, that's
me there.
Yeah. And then we could find a lot of not errors, but some. How would you say
vagaries.
It?
Yeah.
Some vagaries.
Yeah.
Do we know when the different ideas or perspectives start to evolve? Like, is it like 14th century, 15th
century? I just looked it up. It was like in the first to second century.
Yeah.
People were already looking at.
The Catholic Church is very, the Catholic Church is very popular in this one here.
Preterism obviously was
that the first. Historic premillennialism started in the very early.
This I think I read early, first century.
First century.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just interpretation.
Exactly.
As did amillennialism. Yeah. Preterist probably a few centuries later.
Interesting.
What you would say? What
postmillennial? I don't know. Dispensational. That was in the 1800s.
1800s. Wow. This is sort of a new view. What can we take? historic preterist, what, third, fourth, sixth, fourth, fifth century?
Something like that, yeah.
Let's say fourth century. And the postmillennial was, that's pretty sort of new too.
That's the NAR. National Association. Sure
that's old, but I don't know how old.
But, yeah.
Oh, the new apostolic reformation people.
Because I know, what's the name of the famous preacher? He gave that famous sermon. He was postmillennial. Wow. Edwards.
Sinners in the hands of an angry God.
Sinners in the hands of an angry God. He was postmillennial.
Okay.
What's his first name?
Jonathan
Edwards. Jonathan Edwards. Wow. Yeah. Yep. The dispensational premillennialist believes Christ's second coming is two stages, which I just mentioned. There's two stages, the rapture and the return of Christ. He raptures the church before a period of tribulation, which is called the pre-tribulational rapture, then returns in glory to defeat evil and set up his millennial kingdom. So when he comes, when Jesus comes, that's when we get this 1,000-year kingdom, which they believe it is a literal kingdom. This number is literal. The amillennialist doesn't see that number as literal. They see it as a long period of time, which is happening now.
Oh, wow.
The 7-year tribulation, inferred partly from Daniel 9:27, is a time of judgment and suffering on earth, culminating in Christ's visible return. Much of Revelation's narrative describes this period. So the dispensational premillennial camp would read Revelation together with Daniel. Those two books go together. Ethnic Israel and the church are seen as distinct. I already talked about that. Israel and the church are two distinct entities. They're not the same. The amillennial camp would say that the church is now Israel. I don't know who else would say that. Maybe would the historic premillel say that?
Yeah, they would say the same thing.
You're right.
Yeah, the historic premillennial.
They will say that the church is now Israel. Mm-hmm. So Israel is
pretty much everybody beside the dispensationalist.
Yeah. That's why we see that what's going on now in the news that that we should be praying for Israel. Some people will say no, we don't need to pray for Israel because those promises are long gone already. But here, they still believe that the promises are still for the future of Israel. Promises to Israel from the Old Testament, such as national restoration and a role of leadership in the millennium, are fulfilled during the millennial kingdom while the church is in heaven during the tribulation. So the promises, the restoration of Israel will happen here. And so will the role of leadership. Christ's millennial reign is interpreted as a literal future 1,000-year kingdom on earth, where he rules from Jerusalem, fulfilling Old Testament covenants, and physically resurrected believers reign with him. All right, so those are the different camps. Any questions on these different camps? I try to make it as easy as possible. It's a little bit confusing, but
that's just a few.
Yeah, there's more. This is just these are the most popular
the major
ones.
Major points too. Yeah.
Yeah, the major points.
There's the idealist view.
Yeah, the idealist. I like the idealist view a little bit.
That's the only ones I know.
Yeah. What's the idealist view is what again? What would you say?
They believe that it is cyclical, and it these are things that happen throughout history. Well, there is no one beast in the future. It comes back in the back. The Pope, Hitler, those are all iterations of the beast.
Right.
And the other prophecies.
So that's sort of similar.
I don't know that much about it, but that's.
Sort of similar to the amillennial camp a little bit, right? That they believe that some of the stuff are sort of happening now, but.
Well, amillennials, they're usually preterists, so they say it's either happen or they're futurist and it will happen.
Mm. Everybody get this this view, the idealist view? Repeat it again.
That it's iterative. It happens over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Take the destruction of the temple. The temple was destroyed in Babylon. It was destroyed by Antiochus Epiphanes. It was destroyed by Titus. It's cyclical. It happens over and over again.
Oh, gotcha.
So.
So I guess you'd call it ideal because we went through it once, we can get through it again.
Yeah.
And I can see it,
mm-hmm.
You know. But
and what do they believe about the Christ's coming, the second coming?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that much about it.
Okay. All right, so what we're going to be doing tonight is when we read through Revelation 13, 11 through 18, we're going to read it in the lens of the dispensational lens, okay? Don't throw any rocks at me, but that's the thing. Don't. Again, I'm not here to pressure anybody to take this view or take that view or take that view. But, you know, we're all students of the word, right? Go home and study it and see which one makes the more sense to you. Okay? So in Revelation 13, last week, Brother Al did verses 1 through 10.
Yes.
And he pointed out that this first beast in Revelation 1 to 10, a lot of people call this beast the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. The second beast that we see, look at verse 11, we see another beast. The first beast, if you go back to verse 1, comes out of the seashore. My translation says seashore. Mm-hmm. This beast here in verse 11 comes out of where?
The earth.
The first one's out of the sea. The second one is out of the earth.
Out of the earth.
Right. And this beast, again, this is a vision now. This is a continuation of the vision that John, the author of this book, is seeing. And he's seeing another beast that comes out of the earth. And this beast has two horns, like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. The first beast had seven heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems. And on his heads were blasphemous names. That's the first beast. This beast only has two horns, and these horns are like a lamb. And he spoke as a dragon. This beast exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. And he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. So if we're going to take it in this view, this is happening in the tribulation period. If you were taking it in the amillennial view, it's either happening now or it already happened. Okay? You guys got that? That's very important to know that the different views, especially the amillennial and the preterist, this has already happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. But we, I shouldn't say we, but the dispensational camp sees it happening in the future in this period right here, the 7-year tribulation period. Again, the church is not in this tribulation period. The historic premillennial believe the church will go through this period here. And he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. So this guy is making the people in this tribulation period worship the first beast, which Al said is the Antichrist. And this beast had a fatal wound that was healed. What did we say last week that, what did Al, what, I forgot what Al took, what kind of view did he take on that, about this wounded heel? I mean, about this wound that this person took. He talked about it a little bit.
Because
I must have been daydreaming.
The people got resurrected, right? He was wounded and now he came back.
Right.
So he was fooling people. Yeah, he talked about it.
Now, what's interesting here about this is that these two beasts, do you take them as literal or you take them as symbolically?
Say it again.
The two beasts. The first beast in 1 through 10, the second beast 11 through 18. You take these guys as literal or you take them symbolically? Well, obviously, if you belong to some of these camps, you're going to take it the view. But there's a...
Symbolically, of course.
Let's look. Where does it say? I think I wrote it in your notes. Well, it says, I'm paraphrasing here. I forgot where. I think it's in chapter 17, that these two beasts will be thrown into the lake of fire.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, it would no longer be symbolic. It means there are some kind of guy.
Yeah.
Some kind of guys that are going to do something we won't maybe necessarily know until afterward, and then we'll say, oh, that's what was meant. Oh, yeah.
If there was symbolic... I know John's going to counter with something. I know he's thinking. I hear him. I can hear him right here.
I think they're real.
Yeah. If they're not, if they're symbolic, why is John saying 17 that they're going to be thrown into the lake of fire?
But if they're symbolic, how are they going to be ruling the people?
But didn't say ruling.
Well, that's a good question.
Oh, but he's going to be...
Because some people believe those beasts are not literal people. They're just, it's a system.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Or it can be demons bothering somebody.
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Well, if they're literal, then it'd be easy to recognize them. You know, but to see it, you see this creature with seven heads, bada bing, bada boom, hey, that's the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's literal.
Yeah. Somebody walked through a radiation field that was too strong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. So you see that there's a lot of there's loophole in a lot of these views here.
When I think of the Antichrist and his partner, mm-hmm. I don't think of them as beasts. I think of them as people.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Revelation.
That's one way to take it.
But then, if you see them as literal people, this literal person has 10 horns and 7 heads.
Exactly.
Right. That's
but during the tribulation, aren't there going to be human beings?
Yeah, there has to be somebody to be tributed during the tribulation. There's got to be somebody here to...
I mean, the people that are left behind...
It'll be all the people chopping people's heads off.
But there'll be people, and there'll be a leader who's giving them all those commands.
But it can't, is it a person? Because what are the seven heads? Seven
but
heads are seven rulers.
Seven
some people say there's seven kings.
Seven kingdoms.
So that's not a person.
Yeah.
Basically, you can't quite.
Don't lose
it. You know what? I prefer to stay elementary.
Or what was it? You said
a believer, but elementary.
You did the Book of Revelation in what?
Yeah, no, but we didn't go into any of this.
I know, but what's it called?
BSF.
BSF.
I mean, we went into the beasts. And all of that.
BSF is pretty good. My wife does BSF.
Oh, yeah? So she did this last year.
Yeah, I think she did.
Yeah.
So they're not studying it in depth like we are. They go through more like applicational things through BSF, right? BSF.
Bible Study Fellowship.
There you go. Look at verse 13. He performs great signs. This second beast performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And I think we've seen that before.
Like he's copying some guy from the Old Testament.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because he can.
Okay, but can Satan perform miracles? Are there any examples in the Bible of Satan performing a miracle?
Yes.
If he could bring fire down from heaven, remember when Elijah was on the mountain? Why didn't Satan send down fire when the prophets of Baal called out to him?
He also get stopped from doing them, too.
That's why
the fight is always, if it's you and Jesus against everybody, you've got the army on your side, but if it's a group of people on their own, I mean, if you read, well, anyway.
I think of the movie, you know, Left Behind. Oh.
Look at verse 14. And he, the second beast, deceives those who dwell on the earth. So this guy is deceiving the people in the tribulation period. So the dispensational premillennial camp believes that not only unbelievers will be in this tribulation period because the church is up, but there will also be believers because they will become believers in the tribulation period.
They were they become the deceived ones.
Not the believers, the unbelievers.
No, but these,
they were deceived and then they believed.
And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him or given him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life.
Can Satan change? If it was the beast, he can change himself into the form of a man. If he was an animal, he could.
Yeah, okay.
But I think he'll have an easier time just possessing somebody.
But the dragon is Satan. The first beast is the Antichrist, if you want to call him that, and the second beast is the false prophet.
The PR guy.
So Satan has these guys doing all the work. Okay.
The fire from heaven, like, I don't see it as that impressive compared to what we have now. Like, that's a calling, like predicting when a meteor will hit or predicting when lightning will strike.
Yeah.
And like surviving a mortal wound to the chest, like we have heart transplants now. Like people can just survive that now if you rush them to an ER fast enough.
Some people take that, you know, when the beast gets wounded and he comes back to life, that it's just an imitation of what Christ did when he died and he resurrected. Yeah. So it's Satan likes to imitate the things that God does. In verse 15, and it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he causes all, the small and the great, and the rich and the poor, and the free men and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. Now that's, you know, how many views do we, or how many different, you know, views come when it comes to that. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell. So when you have this mark, you cannot buy or sell. Again, if you're looking at this camp, this is all happening here, where the church will not be here. This is happening in the tribulation period.
So they can't trade their yacht for a hamburger.
There you go. But if you've seen it in the amillennial preterist view, well, obviously the preterist view, this already happened, and it's symbolic. And I think I wrote some of your notes where we'll get to that. We'll get to it. In the amillennial, the historic premill, this stuff right here that we're talking about, it's happening now, but in a symbolic way,
and
not in a literal way.
In a real way, you don't even need a mark. The camera can identify you going through the airport, identify you walking down the street. They already have that without going anywhere and volunteering for any mark.
Mm-hmm.
And they can track people with that. It's just the next step is to then say, quote, the mark. The mark is you. The mark is my hand different than your hand. My face different than your face. I've got the mark already. I just haven't been told, hey, now that we know who you are, pledge allegiance to whatever, and now you can trade.
Yeah, that hasn't happened yet. The Antichrist and the, And it says, and he... No,
but it says you have to take on the mark.
You have to take on the mark.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the original Greeks of those... what does that mean? Because that doesn't necessarily mean a tattoo, and it doesn't necessarily mean a guy's writing blue lines on my hand so I look like a barcode or on my forehead. But
I was about to say, like, it kind of sounds to me like how some people pay with their like smartwatches.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knows? And it says the people who receive this mark on their right hand, their forehead, and he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. All right. So we got, what time is it? I don't even know what time is it.
Quarter till. Time to quit.
Quarter till? Time to quit. That's enough. I had enough. We got 15 minutes.
I can see why some of those other groups think that's happening today.
Yeah. You can see that. I mentioned it before. It kind of, you look at them and you say, man, this kind of makes sense a little bit. But then again, you know, every view has a fault in it, if you want to call it that way, or a loophole. Let's read the notes. Most interpreters who see the first beast, 1 through 10, which Al went through last week, as an individual man, also see the second beast as a man too. Others who see the first beast as a power or a movement, there you go, Anna, that the first beast don't have to be a literal man, it could be a power or a movement, tend to view the second beast similarly. So you have the choice either to take these two beasts as literal, as individual men, or you could take them as some type of power or a movement. However, some who see the first beast as the revived Roman Empire and or its head identify the second beast as Antichrist. Many modern interpreters view the first beast as the personification of secular power in opposition to the church, and the second beast as the personification of false religion. Preterists often interpret the second beast as a personification of the imperial cult emperor worship. So during this time, in the first, well, yeah, you would say the first century, like, would it be the first century, or what century would it be that Nero and
first century,
they were in power during that time.
Yeah.
So John is seeing this Nero, this kingdom, so he writes about it. That's if you take the preterist view. So he's taking the second beast as an imperial cult for emperor worship. However, it seems best to take these beasts as representing individuals. That's this camp here. Verse 11. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You interpret Revelation with Daniel. In Daniel, the beasts are kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
Why would not these beasts be kingdoms?
Yeah.
And if you read, is it 17? I can't remember which chapter. It talks to it like it is the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Revelation 17.
It also speaks to it as if it was a man.
That's okay.
It's a nice relaxing ring.
So, yeah, actually, it's kind of both. It's the kingdom, but it's the kingdom personified by a person.
Yeah, that's a good way to take it.
Which is kind of like the way I would see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it kind of has both things.
Right. Look at verse 13:11. Then I saw marks another scene in the vision that John had been observing since 12:1. John saw another beast, one of the same kind, coming up, rising the prominence out of the earth. This beast actions described in verses 12 to 17 make it virtually certain that he is the false prophet of spoken of in 16:13, 19:20. And 2010. These verses here, if you look at them closely, it mentions the phrase the false prophet. Last week when Al was teaching, we don't see in Revelation the word Antichrist at all.
Right.
Doesn't even pop up. But we do see it somewhere in the Bible. Where do we see it?
1 John.
In 1 John.
2 John.
In 2 John 2, yeah, right. So John, the same author of Revelation, mentions the Antichrist. He doesn't mention it in Revelation, but he mentions it in 1 and 2 John, in the epistle. And if you look at it closely, if you read those passages, it describes the false prophet more than it describes the Antichrist. Some people believe the Antichrist is the false prophet. It means the same thing, which is the second beast. So the two beasts may also symbolize the intermingling of secular political power and religion during the Roman period and during the last days. This is the only place in Revelation where lamb does not refer to Christ. We see that in verse 11. We see the word lamb is the first time that doesn't refer to Christ. His two horns may symbolize some political power, but less power than that of the first beast who had 10 horns. First beast had 10 horns, the second one only has 2. Spoke as a dragon, his words will prove to be satanic. His speech will reveal his true loyalty. Now, in that, where, in parentheses, that's what I just said right now, that you go to 1 John, you go to 2 John, you'll see that it's describing more of the false prophet than the first beast. Let's go to 13, 12, 15 in the back. Great signs such as calling fire from heaven and giving breath and speech to the image of the first beast are convincing. These signs are very similar to those performed by the two witnesses. Remember we went over, mm-hmm. talked about the two witnesses? They did similar things. The performance of great signs by the power of Satan is part of the mass deception prophesied by Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2:8-9. Let's go there real quick. This is a good passage here. 2 Thess 2:8-9. In 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8 and 9, look what Paul says. Then that lawless one, who's the lawless one? The first beast, some people will say, right?
The devil.
The lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. That is, the one whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan. It's not Satan, it's the lawless one. And this guy, this lawless one is going to be doing powers. He's going to have power and signs and false wonders. The mark is equivalent to the name of the beast and the number of his name. Apparently, the mark of the beast is some sort of identifiable proof of ownership and loyalty placed on the right hand or the forehead. Again, for the dispensational people, they're going to take that literal. That's going to happen on the hand or on the forehead. But I guess some of you guys were saying that it could be, whatever. Somebody said a chip, or I think you said the watch, whatever.
Tattoos.
Or tattoos.
Some way.
Yeah, we have. There's so many different ways people are saying.
Yeah.
An internet a credit card or whatever it may be. This is very interesting right here. Since there's no evidence of such a practice, we're talking about here. There's no evidence that this has happened already. In the first century society, this mark is apparently an evil counterfeit of the seal on the foreheads of the servants of God. So, according to what I wrote here, this type of whatever mark on your hand or on your forehead has never been done before. Mm-hmm. Maybe it has. I don't know. Maybe it hasn't been recorded, but. But it's never happened before, where somebody is controlling somebody.
The Holocaust, a lot of people had numbers on them.
Oh, yeah.
Right, but those people, they were in a prison. They didn't
get a
chance
to
betray.
Yeah,
that was and they didn't get a chance to renounce their Jewishness if they wanted to.
But this guy's controlling the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Not only just certain people, this is like the whole world.
Well, now don't they have GPSs and animals that have chips that they can see?
Yeah, but we don't
have GPS. Can't control you.
No, but I mean,
this guy's controlling these people by the mark that these people are going
to
have.
It has to do with commerce.
Yeah.
We all need to eat unless we live in the mountains with survival patriot food that lasts.
they're going to say, Anna, do this, and Anna's going to do that.
So you're going to be here during the tribulation period?
Neuralink.
Oh my goodness.
I'm hoping not. Whatever.
No, I hope not to be there.
666, we're going to end here, verse 18. 666, once the economic system based on this mark is instituted, believers will find themselves enemies of society and shut out from the world economy. In other words, the believers in this period here will not get the mark, only the unbelievers. But by them not getting the mark, they will be shut out from the world economy. What they will need is the wisdom offered to them by God. Those who are wise and understand will calculate the number of the beast. In other words, in spite of tremendous but temporary advantages enjoyed by those who take the mark of the beast, the discerning believer in that day will recognize the man of sin and his mark for what it is. It is the number of man and not of God. Though it's somewhat of a mystery now, perceptive followers of Christ in that day will clearly understand the connections between the beast number 666 and the beast himself, possibly through the teaching formally given by the two witnesses. They will understand this connection and will avoid the beast and his mark. Now, a little application. This is for Anna. Ready, Anna? I would suggest that we not waste our time trying to identify a person by this number, or try to identify what's going on in the book of Revelation. I'm not saying don't study it. Of course, study it. It's God's word. Instead, we need to present Jesus, that we might reduce the population of those who will have to go through this bad period of time and who will therefore know what the number of the beast is. Okay? Mm-hmm. Amen. Any questions?
What did you say?
It's in your notes. I wrote it down.
No. Who's not going to have the mark?
Who's not going to have the believers? Only unbelievers will receive the mark.
Unbelievers who turn to the
beast. Yeah, right. Those who got deceived by the beast, right? Right. So.
But how can they not? Don't they already have the mark because they didn't believe in the first place?
They have to pledge something.
Yeah.
To the beast, I guess. Like I said, one thing, of all those perspective, at least in my opinion, they all believe in Christ.
And this is all during the
tribulation. That's exactly,
They all believe in Christ, at least a lot of them.
Like I said, these are all different. I'm not saying these are heretics or they're unbelievers. These are all believers with different views, of Revelation.
I'm just missing all this when I walk out so that I can see.
Yeah. The number 666. You can identify a person. Miro, famously 666.
Yeah.
But you know, if you start adding it up, 666, that fits a lot of names.
Yeah,
if it's Nero, it fits Vespasian, if it's Titus, if it's Domitian, and you can go on. There's been a lot of people, you fudge the letters a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can get 666 for a lot of names.
And some old translations don't even have 666. They have
616.
616.
Right.
That's like the real old translations. Like, I don't even know what translations are those, that maybe the old King James or something?
Yeah.
No, King James is 666. No, these are manuscripts, old manuscripts. And the 616, and that is Nero without the N at the end.
Right.
Neron or Nero.
Gun to my head, you know, obviously I'm a, you know, because this is what I was taught, I grew up. But if I were to throw this away and pick one of these, I think I will pick the Preterist view.
Gun to your head?
Yeah. Because, you know, I'm not, you know, these things already happened, but they happened
they
already.
They happened in a smaller sense.
Yeah. So not in a smaller sense, but. Yeah, well, I don't know. Can you say it that way?
Because a lot of times prophecies get a double fulfillment. And so I have heard a talk through a lot of the preterist things
that
they kind of did, at a certain level, get fulfilled at that time. Mm-hmm. But now they can be fulfilled again, and you'll really see it. Either way.
You grew up with this one here, right?
Yeah.
So if, throw this away, which one would you pick?
That's hard.
Huh?
After all,
none of them.
This is like the first time I'm hearing of each of these. Oh,
okay. So but whatever you, like, what you heard today, what
well,
would you?
Like, right, preterist, because I heard like Nero referred to as the beast, and that he had a golden statue of him. So like, yeah, that hits a lot of points that I've heard about from history, from the Roman period,
How about you, EP?
I'm going to stick with what I know.
Jan, which one would you choose?
Jan, you would you say something.
Huh?
I'm a loneliness.
Yeah, he's already got, he's in one camp already.
Okay, I follow John.
Okay, follow John. Oh, no.
Oh, all right.
Yanni, go ahead.
No, it's tough because I also agree that when you look through history, the amount of persecution, even when you look at some of these documentaries of these emperors in China, I mean, it is insanity, mm-hmm. the amount of people that have died for nothing,
mm-hmm.
like for just living and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when there's a great documentary about this emperor who had thousands and thousands and thousands of people only as slaves, only to create statues that were going to go into his tomb. That was like football fields. Big.
When was this? What emperor? What?
It was in one of the dynasties.
Yeah, one of the Chinese dynasties.
So I when I think of all those cold, dark ages, it sounds like the horrific. Like
mm-hmm.
you know, that doesn't happen nowadays. You know, mm-hmm. it's just so archaic the way that Romans killed people. When you look through like Roman history and how brutal they were,
mm-hmm.
like crucifixion was
normal.
What was a great way to die because they would dismember people, they would pull them apart, and
mm-hmm.
they were beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard.
But remember, this stuff here is not gonna happen. It's not happening. Well, if you take this camp, it's not happening now. It's gonna happen in the future. So nobody knows the future.
But
it could be worse in the future, or it could be
God,
like the way you describe it. It could be that way.
Or even Hitler, God, the mm-hmm. horrific, horrible thing. So I just, you know, when I think about it, I feel like it's happened. It's happening. It's happened. Like.
So you will take probably the idealist.
Idealistic
view. Yeah, idealist is interesting. Yeah.
Idealist.
You certainly can see the cycles throughout history. Yeah.
Well, I think it describes the way God works and the way Satan works. And, you know, this is how Satan thinks. And so it happens over and over again. That's how he does things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it'll be his greatest effort.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be the worst of all.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, you know, he's like, I would say, practicing, or, you know, this is how he works.
And, he always
and so you can look at Revelation and say, yeah, this is how Satan works. And there's an application.
Mm. Yeah.
Another thing, Jewish thought, they're more cyclical than we are. We're sequential. They're more cyclical.
The Jewish people?
The Jewish people. And so they think, you know, history is a cycle. It happens, you know, over and over again. If you look, read Judges, the people disobeyed, they
mm-hmm.
were punished, they repented, God restored them.
Mm-hmm.
Sinned again.
That is judges.
But that's the plot in the whole Old Testament.
In the whole,
everybody
the
was disobedient, and the Lord forgave them, and they went through this, and then they were forgiven. And
so
blah, blah, blah.
It goes through cycles, you know.
They always had second chances.
Babylon to Antiochus.
Mm.
We need to present Jesus Christ that we might reduce the population.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Good application.
He's reducing the population by hunger, famine, dictators, Hitler, China.
Yeah, I think that our biggest takeaway is that last paragraph. Our job is the Great Commission to go out.
Yeah.
You know, spread
here at the preschool,
salvation,
she said.
and to make disciples of Christ.
Amen. Yeah.
Thursday, I went for a walk by the canal by my house, and there was a older woman. I thought she was older than me, but she was like climbing amongst the rocks and trying to pull water out of the canal. So I just walked out and played stupid. Hey, how you doing? What's happening? Oh, I'm getting this water. Oh, what for? Well, I'll give you some pointers on what
you're talking about. Snapper Creek Canal?
Yeah.
Well, I know what you're talking about.
You know the lady I'm talking about?
This thin lady?
No, she was a short lady.
Yeah, short, thin.
Her name is Barbie.
I don't know if her Barbie. I see her every morning.
Okay, I'm going to tell you. Last week, apparently, was the celebration of the Virgin of Caridad.
Oh, yeah.
So she was getting the water because she wanted it for good luck. So there was my first trigger. And she told me to take a shower and pour it on herself because she was going to the Miccosukee
because she wanted to bet and she needed some people to go do it.
Gosh.
That's him later then. This lady's an American.
Oh, no, no, this is a Spanish lady. Yeah. So I, you know, she was asking me questions like, what do I know about the canal? I said, well, people dump cars in here. They used to before they put the barrier up, so it has chemicals.
Yeah.
A lot of Santerias come by here and dump the goats and the chickens and stuff.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I usually come and throw them all away. And she's like, oh, wow. So I said, so you better be careful. The water might not be so lucky. So I told her, so you believe that you're going to get some good luck with the Virgin of Caridad, right? She's like, yes. So you must have a Catholic background, right? Yes. So do you believe in God? So she does. Do you believe in the other guy? Oh, no, I don't like to say his name. I don't believe in evil. I don't believe in Satan. I had to tell her because she didn't want to say it. Yeah, I don't believe in him. I go, well, he is there. There is no such thing as luck. Mm-hmm. She goes, I've never heard that before. I go, well, you said you believe in God, so you must believe in blessing and curse.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, yes, I never thought of it that way.
You got to track her down and see if she's won.
She won.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I got to talk to her for about an hour. I got to talk
an hour
before he left.
Wow.
Before she left. It had gotten dark. She actually followed me home, and I gave her the $1 million that I told her. I gave her a Spanish one and an English one.
That's very cool.
I found out she's had 4 husbands, but yet she's never lusted in her life. When she was a little girl, she was given away by her mother to the grandmother across the street when she was only 4 months old because the mother wanted to have a boy. But she loved her grandmother. The grandmother took her to church in Cuba, and then she helped take care of the mother, the grandmother, until she died. And then she took care of her mother until she died also.
Wow.
And so, you know, I just kept playing these dumb questions to her and sharing all this stuff for her. But I was asking her, you heard of Charlie Kirk? Because it just happened the day before. And she said, I heard something about it. And then I said, well, I got to expand on a whole bunch of things and stuff she had learned from her.
At least she sat there and listened, which is very
nice. I thought she was going to run away, but she just kept asking more and more and more questions.
Oh,
and
you have to go back.
Yeah,
well, I go by the canal all the time. But I gave her the $1 million in Spanish and in English because she has